because we love them.
Them a call us pirates. Them a call us illegal broadcasters. Just because we play what the people want.
It's our anniversary.
Them a call us illegal broadcasters. PTI try stop us,
but they can't. No, they cannot. Welcome to episode 14 of the Interracial John Podcast. I'm your host, at Leslie Mack.
And I'm at Very White Guy.
And you are very white indeed. Before I go into all of our intro stuff, happy anniversary, babe.
Happy anniversary to you, babe.
Aw, it's so great. I'm glad we get to do a podcast on an anniversary.
It's been fun. I love these podcasts. You know, we said this the other day. It's been good for us. I like kind of getting on the podcast and having time to sit and talk and listen. I think it's been great for our communication and relationship. At least I do.
I agree. And also it's been just with all of the, you know, social justice work we've been doing and the turmoil in the country, it's been an excuse to have a little bit of fun and talk about fun things and, you know, step out of ourselves, even though we also talk about, you know, serious stuff. But
yeah, I was looking at our show notes and it's our anniversary and we've got like Governor Nixon, the KKK, like happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary. All right, well, let's get into it. You are listening to the Interracial John Podcast and you can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. You can also find us on our website, which is interracialjohn.com. And we're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. Just search Interracial John. Again, that's J-A-W-N. So let's jump into it.
Let's do it.
I think the first thing I wanted to talk about was some white woman tears.
Why would you? I have something queued up for that one.
Just let's do it. So, this week, I had a white woman cry to me because she was offended by a video that was put up by the group Fuck Hate. I think we've actually maybe played the actual video, the Dear White People one.
Yep.
Because, number one, she felt like they were yelling at her. And that upset her.
Those kids are talking to me. They made this video in Ferguson. It's all about me.
And then was upset that we had posted the video on, you know, our social networks, Facebook, blah, 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 because we thought it was kind of a cool video.
Yep.
And a neat message to be sent. And she also was upset that we never asked her how she felt about it.
And honestly, I sort of like live tweeted your interaction with this individual, friend, I guess, maybe former for you, I don't know. But on the phone with me, she really like literally cried. Like honestly, like, I was waiting for you to ask me. You never asked me. I just wanted you to ask me. Like really, I didn't know that, you know, this social justice movement relied solely and specifically on your opinion.
Right.
That's news to me.
And beyond that, it just is like, it's such a statement on white privilege itself.
Totally.
Which is this idea that if it's not related to you as a white person, that's really the only way that you can understand what it is. And that's the only way that you can be made to care. Because God forbid you think about somebody else for once.
Well, we talked about this yesterday on our White Privilege podcast, and I'm struggling with, because I hear from people, the phrase that I think is appropriate is, my passion doesn't always line up with the receptiveness of the room to hear my message. And that's maybe a judicial or, you know, polite way of saying, like, you know, you're yelling and screaming and we're not going to get the message. But Amy, when we were talking on the podcast, said, you know what? I don't buy that. People are either receptive to justice and they're going to hear this and they're going to be open and willing, or they're not. And when they tell you that you're doing it wrong, you're talking to me and you're not asking me questions, it's really, you know, like white people's way of saying, I don't really want to have this dialogue. That's really what they're saying.
And my other thing is that, you know what? We've been asking motherfucking questions of white people for 30, 40, 50 goddamn years. And here we are. are in the same position again, with them not giving two shits about the plight of black people in this country.
Yeah.
So my response to that is,
Sorry.
That is my response. It really is. I'm like, the fuck? You really going to try and cry to me, a black woman in this country, about you not feeling heard? Man, get the fuck out of here with that.
Well, that was the same message that I got. I had a small group, like 7-8 people in my home talking about race and power and privilege and faith. And it literally was like, you're doing it wrong. Nope, you're doing it wrong. You didn't ask me questions. You know, you're never going to get anything done this way. You're doing it wrong. And I was like, but I'm having like a meeting in my home. The fuck are you doing sitting on my couch pointing fingers at me? You haven't done shit. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's crazy. Well, so we were making fun of, I don't know if you saw it, but there was the Vine or the image that had a you know, white girl hanging over her white boyfriend's shoulders, and they memed the shit out of it. But the ones that were really funny were like, Jenny and Becky are making fun of me. Now I know what slavery's like.
Yes. And even in the conversation with this person there, she tried to equate her feeling offended by the dear white people, video to dog whistle media.
You said that. And what do you mean equate? What was the verbatim language?
The verbatim was, well, it's just like the Mike Brown tape being released.
No. Shut the fuck up. No, shut up. Stop.
Yeah.
Come on.
And that's when I lost it a little bit.
Oh,
and when I said, I literally had to say the phrase, like, let me explain to you why that's incredibly offensive for you to try and equate your irrational response to a video that wasn't dear you specific white woman. It was dear white people. It was a statement about systemic racism. And you're comparing that to a deliberate by a government official decision to give the okay for white people to think that it was all right to murder Mike Brown in the street. This is the equation, a death in the street and a justification of it, and your bullshit ass tears because, oh my God, your delicate sensibilities were, I guess, offended by a video that wasn't specifically made to talk to you as a person. Man, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, it wasn't dear our friend's name.
It sure wasn't.
But, you know, white tears. Oh, my God.
I'm so over the white tears.
You know the problem is, and this is really the problem. So I'll use me as an example. I get angry with shit and I kind of blow up at stuff and I have to, you know, temper my mood. And I've come to realize that it's a form of privilege, that as a white man, my anger is almost always sufficient in any environment. If I get angry, it's like, oh shit, this white guy's mad. Let's fucking listen to him and, you know, kowtow and give him everything he wants. And it's a boardroom and a conference room and an airport with a cop. Doesn't matter. If I get angry, it's like, okay, white guy's angry. Let's give him the attention he needs. It's like a bullying tactic. And white women's tears are the same fucking thing. They can't get angry, or maybe they can, but they don't always get angry. There's that, you know, sort of pejorative, like, oh, you're being a bitch, you know, blah, blah, blah. So they cry. White women cry, and they, just like I talk, every environment, in a boardroom, and I'm not saying all white women. Don't start a hashtag all white women. But white women's tears, they are effective. So why wouldn't they rely on that, right?
Yeah. Well, I don't fly over here with Leslie Mack. You could keep your motherfucking tears to yourself. White women.
Girl, please.
But you know what I also mentioned? The other day, and I wish I could remember where we were, but we were talking to somebody and their decision to, like, berate somebody was like, yeah, what are you going to do now?
But I'm with you, though, that the white woman tears, or just white tears, it's I understand. And I can't believe that it was the mic. You said that this woman cried and compared the video of Fuck Hates, Dear White People, and her feelings about it to, you said, to dog whistle politics and dog whistles. I didn't know it was the fucking Mike Brown surveillance tape. That's disgusting. I can really see why you said you were personally offended. I'm offended.
It's
offensive.
I was like sitting here calmly, just like, yeah, I'm used to talking to these white people, la, la, la. And then you didn't notice, like, when she, at that moment, I jumped up out of my chair. I had my headset in. I couldn't even sit down to say what I had to say because I was like, oh, hell no, bitch. Really? This is where we're going to go with this conversation?
Yeah.
And it was like, she didn't have anything to say because there isn't anything to say.
You told me the response.
What you're saying is fucking bullshit. And you need to take a goddamn minute and step outside of your fucking privilege and understand that there are things going on around the world and in the world that are not about you. And I think I said in that, in the 10-minute conversation 16 times, well, it's not about you. It's not about you. It's not about you. If there could be a takeaway for any white woman listening to this podcast, let me just tell you that. That's what you should think. Anytime you think you're about to get upset about something that actually involves other people, start first and say, wait, is this about me? I'm betting 99.999% of the time the answer is going to be fuck no.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, hard on systems, soft on people. And I'm a white person. I know you've been dealing with this for your entire life, and you're probably done being soft with white people when they come to this. But we, as white people, are just so, as you said, the privilege allows us to never step outside our comfort zone. Our communities are segregated. Our social networks are segregated. We can go our whole life with having very few people of color in and around us. So we never have to literally think about what must it be like. That's why this lack of sort of empathy, and it's all related.
But I have to disagree even with that point, because
I wasn't even done. What are you disagreeing with?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Just that white people never need to. They can go through their entire lives without empathizing or getting out of their comfort zone or thinking about people of color. They can do that. Our world allows us. That's the essence of privilege, is that we can, if we so choose, be – and that's sort of the nature of this blissfully ignorant to the systemic institutionalized racism going around us, because our world, white people, it is just. It's not a just world fallacy. It's a just world, and we think it's a just world. And by never stepping out of our own little bubble, we think forever that it's a just world. And then we're confronted that it's not, and it's really not. We act all shocked and surprised, but it's because we don't go out of our way to have diverse people in our lives. We don't need to, so we don't ever do it.
But that's the part that I don't agree with, because this is America, and like, I just don't believe that it's a rare white person that like in their everyday life doesn't encounter black people. Like, you know, we exist, right?
Depends on where you live, but yeah.
No, it does not depend on where you live. That's not true. I will agree with you that maybe your neighborhood is segregated, maybe your schools are segregated, but you work places. You go in the world.
Yeah, but what you're saying...
You go to a store. You see us. Yes, we exist.
You're right, but our entire socialization surrounding that existence is we're better and you're inferior. We're important and black people are not important. That's our entire socialization. And white people, myself included, we buy that lock, stock, and barrel, and it allows us to kind of put people of color in another box and never really think or consider them, ever.
And I would challenge that to be a deliberate act on your part.
I can't disavow you of that.
That's my opinion.
And you're right. That is a choice, right? Just because we don't have the tools, the understanding, we've still chosen not to, right?
Right. I mean, my thing is, you would have that maybe if you lived like in the middle of Alaska in a rural area and literally never, ever encountered black people. But I just think that for the majority of Americans, that's not true. Most people encounter black people on a regular basis at work, when they're out at their grocery stores, when they go shopping, when they go to the movies, when they watch television. I mean, we're not fucking hidden.
No.
And so that's where I have the problem, where it's like, well, we're just ignorant and we didn't know. It's like, no, you knew. You didn't care. And you didn't care to care.
That's the privilege.
You didn't care to care. And that's the privilege.
Well, you said the other day that people of color have to, on a minute by minute, day by day, every minute of the waking hour, have to consider, what am I doing and how do I interact for me in my life? And how do I interact in your white world? And white people, we don't have to do that. We never, ever have to consider whom else is in this system and whom else are we harming and what are we doing. And we're a part of it in multiple ways. But the two most important, white people, we're in this system. We benefit from it. And we're always just afraid to admit, like, you're right. My school was better. I have more resources. And I had more opportunity. And I had all this stuff afforded to me by very white skin. I'm benefiting from that. And we frequently fail to simply acknowledge that, hey, we're a part of this problem. But guess what? We're benefiting from it, you know? Like, that's just simply acknowledge that we're in this system and we're inherently benefiting from it. Start there and then start really learning and listening. And you said this the other day that, you know, if you're a white person, you want to, you know, expand your sort of understanding of people of color. How about this? And this goes a long way. Listen to and believe people of color when they tell you their interactions, what's happening around them. You know, and I'll use it again myself. I did this to you. Was it like 4 months ago? You came home from the gym and you said, oh, you know, this person, we have towel service. And they kind of said something to me like, oh, you don't have towel service. And you felt that it was sort of racially tinged. And my white kind of worldview, my knee jerk, like a reflexive muscle, instantaneous thought was, it's not racism. It wasn't like that. She didn't mean it like that. And it took me, you know, maybe a day, fortunately, not too long. And I actually listened to you relating this to somebody else. So I was kind of third party to it. I dawned like, holy shit, here's my wife. I don't, there's no one else on this planet that I trust and care and love and trust more implicitly than you. And you told me that this had racial overtones. And what was my first reaction? To downplay it, to dismiss it, to really sort of make excuses for it. And we do that all the time. I really think it's a self-defense mechanism that we white people have. We've trained it like a muscle. And it's crazy. And I did it to you. We've been married for, today's our anniversary, 13 years. And I still did it. So this understanding of our white privilege, it takes a while. And you're not going to be perfect at it. But we gotta fucking try harder.
Right. And I think at a more base level, when it comes to things like this, when you're dealing with issues of race, issues of racism, the first thing that white people should do is stop thinking it's about them. Yeah. Because that's what you did.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's where I lose my patience. Because when we're talking about who's affected by it, it's not you, white people. Yeah. So stop trying to think that it is about you. The people that are affected by racism, that's who you should be thinking about when you're talking about this issue, when you're thinking about this issue, when you're trying to relate to this issue. Stop trying to make it about you. I'm going to say it just three more times just so I get it clear. White people, it's not about you. It's not about you. It's not about you.
You know, we saw the same thing with street harassment when people say, well, it's just hi and they just want to say hi. And no, just stop. It's not about you. You don't get to decide.
Correct.
You're not the decider as to who's offended. Women are telling you this is harassment. Fucking listen and believe it. You know, don't be Piers Morgan. Don't be telling people what they need to do.
We're not going to talk about Piers.
No, Morgan. I'm just saying that's another, you know, telling people what to do. Like, no, just don't do that.
Well, let's quickly go through some Ferguson updates. Lamentably. So I'm sure, as everyone listening knows, the grand jury verdict is expected any day now. While the grand jury does have until January to actually render its verdict, we do expect it to come in the next couple weeks. Some people I've talked to in St. Louis expect definitely before Thanksgiving, which would be this week or next week. And so lots of signals have gone up indicating that. One being a press conference by racist governor of Missouri, Jay Nixon. And so he had a press conference that he called for, I don't even know how to put this, but I'll just do a few quotes from it. Citizens should be able to express themselves peacefully without being threatened by people expressing violence and disorder.
Is he talking about the cops?
Thank you. That ugliness is not representative of Missouri, and it cannot be repeated. And he goes through noting that more than 1,000 area local law enforcement officers have received 5,000 hours of additional training. I just want to be clear that that's like 100 hours per law enforcement official, which is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
Considering the small distance between when this last, I would say, confrontational, which has been going on, ongoing, but the largest confrontation directly in the weeks after Michael Brown's murder till now. It's kind of insane.
More insane, there's only 1,500 troops in Iraq right now.
Yeah.
We have 1,000 in Ferguson.
In Ferguson.
1,500 in Iraq.
Yeah. The area will also continue to be a so-called unified command system that combines the Missouri State Highway Patrol, St. Louis County Police, and St. Louis Metropolitan Police. The state's National Guard will also be available to provide support if necessary. In addition, fire and EMS services have been part of preparations. Please note, just as my note, please note that he didn't mention the Ferguson Police Department at all in that. That phrase. So what is their role here?
Yeah.
Interesting. These measures, this is a quote now, these measures are not being taken because we believe violence will occur, but because we have a responsibility to plan for any contingency. Violence will not be tolerated. That's residents and businesses of this region will be protected.
You know, I said this the other day. That was not a press conference. It was a dog whistle wrapped in a threat.
It was.
Literally. Like, 'cause especially given what happened after the August 9th death of Mike Brown, the militarized response for the 4 or 5 days after. Like, we know that happened. So now you're basically, with that history just 3 months back, you're telling us, fucking, you know, you better be good protesters, better not lash out because we're going to protect these businesses. We're going to fucking shoot you with beanbags and rubber bullets and wooden bullets and tear gas. Remember what happened last time? It's literally a threat. And the dog whistle was to all the white people.
Absolutely. And Don't worry, white people. We got these Negroes in hand and we will kill them to make sure that your day is not interrupted.
And interesting that they don't even talk about sanctity or protection of people and life.
Nope.
Fucking businesses and property.
Yep.
Businesses and fucking property. That just makes me sick.
Let me go through five observations about the press conference. This is from Sean King on the Daily Kos. Number one, Governor Nixon chose to have two African-American men, random, stand in the middle behind him during the press conference. Neither of them answered any questions during the extended Q&A. And it just looks like they were just like, oh, y'all black, just stand right here.
You know what that is? It's hashtag OMF, one of my friends.
Yep. Number two, in his very first sentences, he starts the presser off talking about the ugliness of property damage and how it will not be tolerated. Typically, how a presser begins shows the primary issue of importance, and it's disappointing to see potential property damage be the focus in the light of the human rights abuses as documented by Amnesty International in Ferguson.
Yeah, it's like when you write an essay right back in like third and fourth grade, they tell you, start with the theme, right? That was his theme. That was the theme of this press conference. We're going to fucking protect property.
Number three, the entire tone, content, and trajectory of the press conference operated under the assumption that Darren Wilson would not be indicted and that an angry response would follow. This is troubling.
He knows it.
Why is the governor operating under this assumption? What does he know?
Yeah, he knows.
Number four, as has been suggested for months, Nixon has now confirmed that the National Guard was on alert and has been training for thousands of hours on how it can respond to the grand jury announcement and its decision. And number five, two names not mentioned in this 45-minute press conference.
Nope.
Mike Brown and Darren Wilson. Why not? Why not?
That's fucking crazy.
So he put that dog whistle out and then...
Don't forget, this is Governor Anglo-American Justice Nixon, right? Didn't he say?
Yep.
He had the press conference. We're going to...
Oh, no. That wasn't him. That was the deputy.
Oh, the Anglo-American
the was deputy the... deputy governor.
That wasn't, but so his office, governor. His office...
Well, yes, his office, but that's a separate voted position.
Okay.
It's not linked. They're not linked together.
Except by racism.
Well, yes, except by racism. So, of course, he sent the whistle out to all the white people, and the KKK responded.
Yeah, because that's who it was for.
It was. Right?
It was like, hey, let's drum up the KKK.
Let's do it.
We need their fucking input.
Yepper.
So they, a couple of things they're doing are just ridiculous. They're opening their doors, I guess, to like, you know, Mexicans and homosexuals. And so they're loosening their admission requirements so we can all hate on black people, basically. Like, oh, you know, race war is happening. We better recruit all the fucking people we can.
But I thought that wasn't in Missouri, though.
It might be Missouri. So Missouri, the and I'm not even going to name their organization. It's a KKK branch, I guess. But they fucking put out a letter lifted up into the ethosphere by reading all of it because it's just disgusting. But it was honest to God a fucking threat. Like literally like you've awoken this giant and the good people of St. Louis and we're going to protect you and shit. And it's just – it's so disturbing. So
and
disturbing.
The gist of the letter was if you disturb our day – I'm not kidding you. If you disturb our day, we'll kill you.
And here's the – that's the sentence. We will not sit by and allow you to harm our families, communities, properties, nor – disrupt our daily lives. And just that language, disrupt our daily lives. Like, people are out protesting for a trial. They just want a fucking trial. And you're going to threaten to kill people because they're disrupting your daily lives?
Hey, if they cause a traffic jam, shoot these motherfuckers.
The fuck. And then they even literally, like, we will use lethal force as provided under Missouri law and some sort of, like, stand your ground. I don't know. But it's literally, like, I just, you read it, it's like, how did major news media, it's like, whoa, this is, I understand they're a hate group and the KKK, but they're fucking threatening to kill people. Really? That's insanity. Absolutely insanity.
Typical, actually. So then yesterday in Berkeley, Missouri, which is just a town over from Ferguson, they the city decided to send its residents via their mailboxes a letter.
Yeah, and this one's, and it's not just more egregious, but like, you expect that shit from the KKK. This is a government office. This is the city government office. Let's play the audio clip.
These two North County cities have now sent out warning letters to residents about the coming grand jury decision, instructing them to have plans in place just in case of, quote, a period of disruption. Fox 2's George Sales is live in Berkeley tonight, where the letter has been popping up in residents' mailboxes. George?
Well, Mandy, many of the pieces of advice in this letter sound more like something you would see in preparation for a storm. In fact, the letter even says to treat this as though you're preparing for a storm. Residents here in Berkeley are being told to prepare, at least potentially, for needing to stay in their homes or close by for several days.
We can keep playing if you want, but that's the gist of it. And it's just, that, you know, that's not even a dog whistle. That's an absolute stoking of fears of white people. And there's nothing in there about, you know, any of the, what's going on. It's all just fear, fear, fear. You should be afraid. You should be scared. And that's just so...
No. And this is something that I took. The KKK message and the Jay Nixon message was to white people. This was to black people. And what it was telling them was, you better not do anything. Do not protest. Do not leave your house. Because we're not afraid to cut your power off. We're not afraid to ensure that you can't do anything. We will do whatever we have to. Mm-hmm. And you should be prepared for that. They're comparing it to a storm. A storm is an act of God.
Yeah.
It's an act of nature. And so that is what they're comparing this to. And they're basically saying they will react as though there was no choice on their part but to respond to these peaceful protesters.
I wonder, you know, like a fly in the wall in that meeting where a bunch of people in the city, like, and I'm not trying to give anybody a pass, but I'm curious as to what the logic was. What was the thought process? Like, well, you know, maybe there's going to be some unrest, and well, maybe we should inform citizens. Like, what really was their thinking?
You got it all backwards.
I don't know. I'll
tell you how it went. It went like this. Okay, when these niggers start protesting, these are the things that we're prepared to do. We can cut their power. We can cut the water off. We can quarantine their neighborhoods and make sure that and put a curfew in place. Okay, so based on those things that we're prepared to do, this is what we need to tell people about.
We need to cue white people into this. Yeah,
that's what it was. There's no black people. There's no white people that live in Berkeley. Let me just start you there. Okay, this is not a white neighborhood that they were sending this letter to. They're not cutting power off to white people. They're going to keep black people out of the white neighborhoods, Drew. You are approaching this from a sense of rationality and non-racism. And that's not what happens in Missouri.
So what's the opposite of a dog whistle? What's a clear, overt
foghorn? It's not a dog. It's
There's
a
no
threat.
Whistle. It's a threat.
It is a threat to them. And it is letting them know that this is the way that their city is prepared to respond, to completely cut them off from all services. And they should be prepared for that to happen.
Mm.
That's what it was.
Well, let's go on to what we're doing, what we can do in the wake of the grand jury announcement.
Well, before we go into what we're doing, I would like to just mention that I cannot express my gratitude. I'm in awe. I am incredibly proud of the work that the leadership and protesters and the youth in Ferguson and in Shaw and in the St. Louis area have been doing. They have been spending the last month and 2 months holding training sessions to teach people how to de-escalate situations. They have been working on scenarios with which they're going to encounter hostility on the part of law enforcement and potential other people as well, and how they should be responding to that in a peaceful manner with an eye towards safety of all. And I'm just reminded again of that quote that Dr. Cornel West said, which was that I tell white people all the time, when a black person crosses their path, they should give them a standing ovation. Because after 400 years of persecution, we still respond with calls for justice and love. And that is what the people of Ferguson are doing on a consistent basis. And I'm just really, I almost tear up a little bit talking about it. I'm so in awe, as I said, and proud to even know, have any contact with them and be able to interact with them and see the work that they're doing. And it's incredibly inspiring. And, you know, while they're preparing for peaceful justice, their elected officials that they pay are preparing to wage war against them. And yeah. It's a amazing thing to see their commitment to their principles and the morals that they hold high in the face of just constant indignation towards them and their efforts. So I just wanted to make that, you know, just say that, because it's really been something that's been motivating me to try and do whatever small things I can do, because they have earned that respect and right for me personally. So to that end, there's been a significant lack of organization surrounding the rest of the country's response to this pending grand jury announcement, which I think is really critical to show that this isn't just a Ferguson problem.
Nope.
This isn't just a St. Louis problem. This isn't just a Missouri problem. This doesn't just have to do with Ferguson. It doesn't just have to do with St. Louis. It has to do with systemic racism within our criminal justice system and our law enforcement activities. And so it's really important that the rest of the country show that we too are feeling this, that we too are experiencing it, that we too are in solidarity with the things that Ferguson and Shaw and St. Louis are fighting for. And it's been disheartening, but also not surprising at all that there's been no, you know, national focus by any national group, you know, these so-called groups that are allegedly there to help end racism and have these conversations, like, you know, the NAACP and Race Forward.
Color Lines.
Color Lines is a part of Race Forward. But all of these groups that you would expect to be doing something. And it became clear last week, I had a conference call with some St. Louis area clergy and some other protesters, and nothing. And the thing is, I've heard over and over again, people say, well, we're waiting to see what Ferguson wants, you know, what they're going to do. It's like they have so much that they're worried about, which is the actual safety of their lives and their city, that they shouldn't be expected, nor should it be something that is warranted for them to worry about a national response. That's the furthest thing from their mind. It's up to us out here in all of these other places to plan, to organize, to support them. So to that end, I did start just trying to connect as many of the planned organizations and protest responses to the grand jury announcement as I could. And you can find this information at fergusonresponse.tumblr.com. We have 51 cities so far, and there's also a link if you have a city that you can add to it. And so my hope is to get as many cities. And if you don't see your city there, I encourage you to plan something. Most people are providing a definite contingency for whether this action in their location will take place the day of the announcement or the day after,
right,
and designating a time and a specific place for people to converge. And so if you are planning something already, please go to that website. Again, it's fergusonresponse.tumblr.com. And if you haven't planned one or you don't know what's going on in your area, check the website out first. And if there isn't something, do something.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if I share this with you, but I posted it. So maybe people know I've tweeted about it and talked a little bit on our podcast. We're having some conflict with our faith, with Unitarian Universalists in general, locally in our own congregation and maybe nationally with the UUA. So I posted the Ferguson Response Tumblr link into our local Facebook group just for our church. And it was like, honestly, there was so much of a like, oh, this is great. When's it going to be? Like, no, that's not how it works. You fucking decide. You do something. Oh, I'll just be there. Just tell me when. No. I literally had to, like, spell it out in the Facebook group. Like, someone of you needs to decide to do this. Then you need to decide what you're going to do and whether it's going to be the day of the announcement or the day after. And just fucking do it. Even if it was a candlelit vigil. Anything. Fucking something. You know? It's like, ugh, frustrating.
It is frustrating. But anyways, again, I just want to, I'll repeat it again at the end of the show, but it's fergusonresponse.tumblr.com. Find your city, add your city, make sure that we prepare and we're prepared to support the people of Ferguson and also to make it known that this problem is a nationwide one and not isolated to Missouri, St. Louis, and Ferguson.
And I would say, people listening, this is really important for white people. I have so many people that are, so there's a palpable, you know, there's something in the air, right? White people can fucking feel it. We know it. There's something going on. There's a shift happening fundamentally. But a lot of them don't know. And I'm not saying coddle people, but this response I get, it's like very various forms of, well, you know, what was so different about this one? You know, why Mike Brown?
I've had to answer that question so many times.
My response is, it's not, if you think it's about fucking Mike Brown and you think it's about just Ferguson, you just haven't been listening. You know, this is so much more than that. You just haven't been listening.
And it also just gives this impression of like, you know.
Well, you'll get over it is what I
not,
hear.
No. What I hear is, and when they say it to me, it's like, I didn't care about this prior to Mike Brown.
Oh, yeah, that's there too.
That's what they're trying to say. And that's what the implication is like, well, you didn't care about this before. So why do you care about it now?
Yeah.
And this is a constant thing where white people feel the need to make a black or brown or any person of color justify their convictions. I'm supposed to answer to them and give them a reason.
Yeah.
A reason that they think is important.
Well, that's again the whole white, like, you know, you didn't ask me, you didn't, you know, I'm not involved. And when we had the White Privilege podcast, Charles Wade said, you know, just as a white person, as an example of somebody that does something really, really good, if we as a group, the leaders in Ferguson, decide to go left and at the last minute pivot and say, you know what, we're gonna go right, white people just go right. Don't say, well, why are we going right? We are prepared to go left. That whole, you know, like an academic, you want to hear yourself think. And he was deep in this. He said that white people are not familiar or accustomed to being secondary to people of color. We're just not used to taking our direction for people of color. And it's, you know, it's crazy.
I think that was Charles that said that.
Yeah, I said Charles. Did I say Charles Wade? I thought I referenced.
No, I thought you said Drumbeats.
No, I said Charles.
Oh, okay.
That was Charles's comment. Charles Wade, a.k.a. Charles Wade. But I thought it was deep. I really was like, you're right. You know, we white people are just historically never, we have no frame of reference in taking direction from people of color.
Well, that ends the serious portion of our anniversary podcast.
Please.
So let's get to some fun stuff.
Well, because, you know, today's our anniversary, so let's play this. Let's get it out there.
Tomorrow we'll come and girl, I can't wait.
It's our anniversary.
The first thing I'll do is rush straight to you.
It's our anniversary.
Yeah. You know, so I wanted to talk a little bit about, I guess, just us, our relationship. And in the movies, they call it, I guess, the meet cute, right? Harry met Sally, the meet cute. So I want to talk about our meet cute because we've told it a few times, but I don't think we've told it on our podcast. Maybe we told it to Clove and Cher on Chonilla. But
I don't think we actually told them. They read it because we were the Chonilla couple.
Okay.
We haven't actually said it anywhere personally on air.
Let's do it. So this very white guy was working at California Pizza Kitchen, CPK, and I was recently college graduate, and not that I'm better now, but I was a bit of a fuck up, and I was working behind the bar, and I was probably smoking a lot of weed, and probably drinking behind the bar too, your typical, you know, 20-something fuck up, but everyone knew it. It wasn't like a secret, and you were, I think, in Indiana at the time.
I'll tell you my side before we get to the part where we interrupt.
Well, I want to say this, that people knew of you and they knew me and they knew you were coming back. And I kept hearing from like everybody like, hey, dude, you better fly straight. She didn't play that shit. You need to tighten your jib. That was the warning I got from everybody before I met you.
Well, yeah, I had been working for the company for CPK for quite some time. I had been a corporate trainer and had been opening a number of new restaurants. They had a large opening period for about 2 years of their opening, and I was traveling a bunch and didn't even have an apartment. And I was in Indiana at the time, and I was just sick of the travel. And I kind of was like, hey, listen, I want to come home. Can I come back to Chicago? And they were like, yeah, dude, you can just come back and manage the original location I worked at, which was the one that very white guy worked at.
Yep.
So I was coming home to my original location. So yeah, a lot of people knew me because I had opened the store and I had known everybody that, you know, hired a lot of people that worked there as well.
Like everyone that you had trained and all the managers were like, oh, dude, you know, Leslie's coming back. You better stop your shenanigans. And of course I didn't. I didn't take that under advisement, the white guy I am. And I think I was supposed to work and probably just a random day, like a Tuesday. And I rolled in super late, like 20 minutes late, because that's how very white guy does it. Just, you know, fuck it. I'll come in when I want to come in. And I probably was high and just, you know, whatever. I just rolled up in there and you were there. And I totally did not expect you to be there. You caught me way off guard. So I come walking in like, I don't even have my shirt tucked in or have my tie on. I'm just like a complete fucking mess. And you're like, oh, hi, I'm Leslie. And right away, you're just like, well, what time are you working today?
Well, I could do my part.
All right, let's do it.
Okay.
So I walk in, I'm lit, and I'm fucking, I'm shirt tucked, and I'm like, hey.
I said, hey, I'm Leslie. You must be Drew.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you, too. What time were you supposed to work today?
You know, like, now.
Yeah, but what time were you supposed to work today? Yeah,
like, till closing. Like, now till close.
Well, what time were you scheduled to work?
You know, like, whatever the time is here at the bar area, the normal time, I think, you know. Not like, what time is it now? Like, 4:30? Like, 4:30.
Okay, well, let's go walk back to where the schedule is, and let's take a look and see what time it says there.
Oh, okay. You're taking me by the arm. Okay.
So I grab his hands, and I pull him, back to the schedule, and I walk. I find his name. I pull it over, and I go, oh, here you are. It says 4 o'clock here. It's 4:15.
You even asked me, what time is it now?
No, what time is it now? Right.
4:15.
Okay, you're late.
Oh,
don't let it happen again.
Bang, we're married.
Yes, that was our very first interaction. And I usually when we tell this story, I say that he was a horrible employee, but he has made the most wonderful husband.
Oh, thank you.
So
auspicious beginnings. But, you know, actually it's not. I think we said the other day, but we're talking about, you know, like women of color and this and that. And I'll clarify where you went to high school. And I don't think it's a woman of color, but where you went to high school, matricula, it's just amazing women. And you don't play. And I can't deal with a individual in my life, much less my best friend and my wife, who's all like mealy mouth and, you know, pussyfoot. I like direct. I really do. I respond to that. I respect it. And I appreciate it. And you've started right away. Like, well, don't be late again. Very direct.
Yeah. And we were at dinner for a birthday dinner for one of my friends from high school. Give my co-host from No Bitch Left Lady Behind, J. Lady J, a shout out. Happy birthday, Jay. And so it was three of us that had gone to my high school, Emma Willard School, and Drew was the only
happily
male there at the dinner. And so he's just like sitting there and we're going off about this thing and that thing and talking about it. He's like, man, you guys are just, you're intense. It takes takes a special guy to be with you ladies. And it's like, yeah, probably, but you're all better for it being
totally
with us.
Totally.
So yeah. So that's our meet cute. And I love you, babe.
I love you too.
Aww.
What was that? We wanted to talk about some TV stuff.
Just one TV thing, which was freaking Gotham this week.
Oh yeah.
Let me just tell you something. I love the show. Last week, I even mentioned, or I think on our last podcast, that they came back with a vengeance, and the Penguin's umbrella episode was so good. But this past week's episode, Bruce Wayne, and this is like baby Bruce Wayne. He's just a kid, right? He's in school. Yeah. He went buck wild.
Don't talk about my mama.
On this dude for talking about his mama, his dead mama. Lord Jesus.
I actually had to vine it.
You did vine it?
Yeah, here, let me see.
Oh, play the vine.
Don't talk about my mother.
You're a weirdo. Your mother must
be. That's him slapping the shit out of
him. That's him slapping the shit out of this kid, man. And I'm telling you, this slap, he started from like way.
He winds it up.
He winds it up, smacked the kid square across the face out of nowhere. The dude barely got mother out his mouth.
Yeah.
Pap.
Smack.
Don't you talk about my mama. Oh, my shit.
Well, and then later on in the episode, Alfred gives him his daddy's watch, and he puts it on like brass knuckles and
beat the shit out of that kid again. He went to the dude's house, knocked in his door. He opened the door. He's like, what are you doing here? Oh, we got some unfinished business, motherfucker, and beat the shit out of him.
And I love it, too, when he's done beating him up, and the guy's like, he almost killed me. Alfred leads in and he goes, remember that.
Yeah.
He almost killed you, and he can do it again.
Yep.
Biatch.
I love this because, and I think it was, I don't know if it was Chris from Insanity Reports or Rod from TBGWT, but one of them mentioned that, like, they love that they don't treat Bruce Wayne, the character, as, like, a normal-ass kid, because you can't become Batman and be a normal-ass kid. Like, you have to have some effed-up stuff happen, and then your entire development has to be a little askew. And so I love that they treat the kid that way. Like, yeah, that kid that smacked the shit out of his friend for saying his mom, like, this the word mother.
That shit ain't normal.
And no, that's definitely a dude that puts a cowl on and starts fucking up people later on in life.
That's Batman shit crazy.
For sure. For sure. So Batman, we were singing that Who You Finna Try song.
Yeah.
To
Who
it.
You Finna Try. Don't talk about mommy. Bat slap, slap, slap.
That's right.
That was the title of my Vine, was Bruce Wayne. Slap, slap, slap.
I think that might be the title of the episode.
Who You Finna Try.
Bat slap, slap, slap.
Bat slap. I rewound it like 20 times.
Honestly, the minute it happened, I was like, pause it. Get the fuck out of here. Did he just slap the shit out of his kid right on the television? Yeah. It was the best thing ever.
And they did have a wide enough shot. You could see him just...
Oh, yeah.
He dug
his
deep.
His face. Yeah. I'm telling you, I would like to know. I want to talk to the two
maybe
actors.
He really hit him.
Because it seemed like he really hit the guy.
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, he was angry as shit. Yes. Oh, my gosh. It was awesome.
Gotham's been good. I really like it.
Yeah, he got a little swag, too. Them girls say hi to him. He was like, hey, what's up, girl?
Yeah. Mm. You know, we didn't have on the list, but we've been talking before about The Flash. And just,
oh, my God, The
show's
Flash.
So good.
Oh,
so good.
I love it.
For a show, and you know what, really, I'm going to be mad at Fios, but we have Verizon. They don't fucking have any CW stuff on there on demand. So if you miss it, you got to go buy it on iTunes.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it's on Comcast or Hulu or something, but it's not on.
It is on Hulu, I think.
Yeah, we got to do that at maybe the beginning of the year. Just uncouple from cable.
Yeah,
and just
get
do
rid of our
Hulu
cable,
and Netflix. And
have this cable.
Yeah, fuck that bill. But it's been really good. And for a CW show, they put a lot of the special
the
effects
special
are really
effects
good.
The amazing. The story. The guy that plays The Flash. I just, he's so good. I love that show. Everybody should be watching. It's fantastic.
I think a lot of supervillain and superhero shows sometimes can go one way or the other way versus the villain of the week versus the sort of the archetype long story kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But The Flash does it so well. And because he's working at that institute and what was the guy that's in the wheelchair? I can't remember that actor's name. Ed something or other.
Oh, yeah. The guy that was from Ed. I don't know his name either.
So that, you know, the future with that guy. So you're getting every week, even though they don't give you implicitly long arc stuff.
Right, it's like teasing things out.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's really good.
They've done a really good job at it. It's a very good show.
You know, I don't watch the cousin of that show, the companion. Is it Arrow?
Arrow,
a lot of people like that.
Yeah, we should binge watch that maybe this summer or something.
Something to do. Rod and Karen talk about it a lot.
A lot of people do. People like it. Black Girl Nerd loves it. A lot of people like it.
And speaking of Rod and Karen.
Oh, my God.
Stand time.
Now, I know we talk about the Black Guy Who Tips all the time, but I'm not kidding you. This week of Black Guy Who Tips podcast, it's been insanely. The other night we were just starting to watch one on the way to bed, and we literally were in tears, crying our eyes out on Monday night show, which was just Rod and Karen, and they were, I mean, it was just out of control.
So I would
say Chick-fil-A letter.
The amount of content they put out is staggering.
It's
insane.
They do five shows a week, and that's just their regular podcast.
Yeah.
They have their premium podcast shows. They do Rod has Medium Talk. Karen has Lip Smacking Good. They do Balls Deep Sports every Friday. They have the Nerd Off. I mean, they're taking this shit to the next level.
What I need to say is, with that amount of content every week, it would be understandable to have, you know, ups and downs, and maybe there's more news or more, you know, they have some shows that are better, this and that. That's completely acceptable, understandable. And they're always funny. They're
always
very good.
Always.
But like you said, this week, on point.
Uh-uh.
Every episode's been
every
fucking
episode
hilarious.
I've been like belly laughing, crying my eyes out. Can't stand it. It's just been so, so funny.
And I don't want to say this to we have Juliet and Carl. We only have the two listeners. So I'm not going to tell you to stop listening to our podcast.
No,
but
I'm just saying,
add
you need to listen to the Black Guy Who Tips, and anybody else who's listening, you need to listen to the Black Guy Who Tips. And if you can, become a premium member, because you get access to all their additional content, including Balls Deep Sports, which is on Friday, and it's just the best sports show. They talk about all sorts of stuff, but talk about sports too.
Go through the whole week. So they started with the Chick-fil-A list.
Chick-fil-A letter list. I mean,
priceless.
it was on Fleek. So
he even said the next day that they must have resonated because the comments were on Fleek.
They were.
It was fucking
I wrote a Stitcher review because it was so funny. I tweeted about it. Even now I could listen to it again.
So that was that
funny.
That was the Chick-fil-A, and then the next one was at the No Men's,
the yeah. Kojic Gate.
Oh my god, is that what's called, Kojic Gate?
Well, that's what Rod dubbed it. So, and then the football game, the Utah football game, where the kid dropped the ball before
Deshaun
the
Jackson.
End zone,
yeah.
And then started doing his full on like extended victory dance, and the other team picked the ball up and ran it back and scored.
And I guess. I didn't get to see it, but it like, sounded like his victory dance was like really choreographed. Like
Rod's description
the meal
of it's
yeah.
beautiful. He did like a whole, he danced and his arms were flapping and all sorts of stuff.
So No Men was the Kojic, and I don't have the original video, but
But the best thing about this that has come out of this has been this most amazing remix of this Kojic Gate. So let's play that just because it needs to be played as many times as possible.
All right. And I just if you can, and we shouldn't mock the gentleman, but there's a little bit like they're using like the pray the gay away. Like this guy's apparently was a homosexual, and now he's saying that this church and through prayer he's no longer. But
right.
he proclaimed that he's no longer gay by doing this speech about not using a purse and not loving men's in a paisley jacket with a purple shirt and a giant fucking bow tie. It's like there's a little bit of irony, a little bit of irony.
My favorite thing of the video itself is just humorous because you know he's funny. You can see that it's a funny interaction, but the remix is so funny because somebody like went to a lab.
Totally.
Wrote this background music, had people come and do chorus vocals. It's so well produced. I like dance to it. It's so funny.
No more men.
No more men. I mean, come on. It's so fantastic. Anyway, so please, The Black Guy Who Tips, you can search for it on iTunes and Stitcher, and you can also just go to theblackguywhotips.com. I implore you.
Yeah,
Karen and Rod are just the best. If you want to follow them on Twitter, it's at Rodimus Prime. And Karen is at Say Dat Again, D-A-T. And they're just the best. And we love them. And just they're just awesome.
Highly recommend. But Juliet, Carl, don't you go leaving us. I'm watching you.
Listen to us and listen to them. No, but we just really love them. And I just wanted to really just applaud them for the content they put out. And they're just a real inspiration to us and to a lot of other podcasters. So
absolutely. I think that the episodes that we're talking about that are absolutely this funny this week, they're going to be timeless. You don't need to. It doesn't have to be au current. You can listen to it a week later.
I'm going to New York today. I will be listening to Monday's episode on the train. That's how funny it was. And I've listened to it twice already. And I will continue to listen to it again.
And Monday was the Chick-fil-A list?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Karen was, beyond. Just beyond.
And, you know, and Rod did that whole list. And I wonder, like, I guess people were using all those words. He had like, this huge list, but like, he just sat down and typed it up. The manager's like, you can't say bruh, you can't say chill. It's like, who does that? What was he thinking? That he wasn't going to get mocked?
No, I think he was just,
was it serious?
List
was serious?
That's my thing. The list was probably serious because I picture the people working there, especially like in the kitchen, that's who it was directed to, and Eric specifically, because he yelled
crossed
at one dude, Eric. I just can only imagine the shenanigans going on at that restaurant.
Yeah,
it just can
totally.
Only be just having been a restaurateur and restaurant manager. Just like I know sometimes shit can just get so out of hand, and it just must have gotten to the point of like he couldn't hear something was on Fleek one more goddamn time.
I wonder what the individuals working, what Eric and his cohorts are doing now, right? Because if the manager got this perturbed by their just daily language, and now he's outlawed these terms and words, they've got to just be having a blast of a time.
I know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, please.
He's going to hear a lot of that.
They're going to get a whole lot of that. So we'll finish up
the anniversary episode.
Yeah, we'll finish up the anniversary with a little anniversary trivia about
tidbits.
The interracial Joan. How about that?
I like it.
I thought you had a song or some crap you wanted to play.
Oh, well, see, you wanted to do the 2020 song, and when I was thinking of our anniversary, I can't lie, this is the song I thought of.
Happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary. Pour a cheerful toast and fill it, happy anniversary. But be careful you don't spill it, happy anniversary. Oh, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary, happy anniversary.
So, yeah.
Do you know what that is?
Is it the Flintstones?
It is the Flintstones.
So I'll just say two things. One is that the two songs we both thought of to play for our anniversary is so indicative of your whiteness and my not whiteness.
That's the interracial John.
I was like, 2020 Tone, and you're like, the Flintstones.
It's embedded. Happy anniversary. Happy
terrible.
Anniversary.
That song's
happy
the worst.
Anniversary. Happy anniversary. Mm.
I think my sentiments are the first thing I'll do is run straight to you. It's our anniversary. Mine's better.
I didn't say it was a great song. It's just the first thing that came to mind.
Okay, so we're going to go through. We each came up with some things that you may or may not know about the interracial John.
You may or may not know.
So why don't you start? Okay. Do the first one.
Yeah. So maybe some of you know this Very White Guy's got a pretty eclectic music taste and includes a lot of jam bands, Grateful Dead, Fish, and Fish in particular. That's P-H-I-S-H. We've been to or I've dragged you maybe, attended 30 different shows over the years. I think it's more like 35. I've personally been to maybe 50, but I've taken you to 30, including New Year's Eve at Big Cypress, the whole long weekend set and a couple of different camping shows. And
yeah,
as I look back, I think the Fish epoch is ended, right?
Like for us, yeah, I'm done.
But there's a lot of good times. A lot
of
good trips.
Oh my god, so many good times. So much.
The band is different too.
The whole thing is different. And we're just older too. It was great for when we did it, but it was fun.
Very good.
So we probably mentioned this a few times, maybe not everybody knows, but we lived in Argentina for 2 years.
Hablamos español.
Yes, which was awesome. And actually wasn't that long ago. It was just a few years ago. And we had a wonderful time. It's a great country. And we loved every minute of our time there. It was so great.
Absolutely. And so I'm sure maybe people knew when I got the jingle palette and I put this in there. But our movie, and each couple's got their movie, our favorite movie, is Quick Change, starring Bill Murray and Gina Davis.
I love that movie. So funny.
I don't have the jingle palette plug anymore, but you mileage upgrades are ruining Mrs. Crane's beverage service.
Let's see. Oh, we keep a gratitude jar in our front foyer with a pen and notepad, and we jot down good things that happened to us all year round, any fun things we did or just good things that happened. And then we, on New Year's Eve, we empty the jar and we read all of our notes together.
Yeah. And we just started this maybe a couple of years ago, and I forget who recommended or where we read about it, but other couples really, it's easy to get caught up in the day to day and forget about some of the good stuff. So when you have that by the door and it's right there and you just pass it, it's simple to just write a quick note, sign it, put it in the jar. And it was, each of you have done it. I love it. That's my favorite, like, New Year's tradition is going back and reading all the good stuff, all the
it's
gratitude.
It's so fun. We get to kind of pick our top 10 for each of us, and it's great. It's so much fun.
That was good.
Yeah.
So maybe people know you're Jamaican. You're from Jamaica, and we got married in Jamaica 13 years ago today. And when we did it, destination weddings weren't really the thing. We were a little bit ahead of that curve. Mm-hmm. But we got married, and we spent 17 days after that. So the total trip was, I think, like 19 or 20 days.
No, 17 days included.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So a 17-day wedding and honeymoon in Jamaica. Man, can you imagine taking 2 weeks off now? Wouldn't that be amazing?
And it was more than 2 weeks. That's
I know, but that
thing.
Seems like an impossibility.
I know.
We're
totally different lives now, but it was so fun.
Oh, that was great.
And we had all of our family came down. We had about 65 people total at the wedding, 30 or so from the states that flew down for it. And we had about 5 days with everybody all together. We arrived on a Friday. Most people came Saturday, and the wedding was Tuesday. So we had all this time for our families to bond with, like, no schedule. Nobody had to do anything.
Yep.
We didn't have to worry about cooking or feeding everybody because we were at an all-inclusive resort. And it was such a great time to bond with, but to have our families get together and bond and get to know each other, and it was so relaxed and so awesome.
We got married on Tuesday, and Wednesday morning we're like, deuces.
We had like a farewell breakfast at the resort, and we were like, peace. We're going in the grill. But it was fantastic. So we have two doggies. That's another fact about us. Beatrice, who is 8, and she's a mostly beagle mix, and she's super sweet and really lovey-dovey, slightly pushy and very lazy. And then we have our little Bailey, who's just 3, right? Not even 3 yet. Not yet 3. And she's miniature pincher and chihuahua mix. They're both rescue dogs we got through shelters. And she's a ball of energy and very sweet, but very independent and just a happy little dog. She's fantastic. And they are very close to each other.
I like to pretend, even though she's not, she's a, you know, like a mixed breed mutt from the pound. But I like to pretend she's one of those designer dogs, like a Chippin, chihuahua miniature pincher, right? Like they have these names like Snickers. Doodles and stuff. I like to think of her as a designer dog, even though she's not.
She isn't. She thinks she is.
She acts like it. She acts like it. So we've done some outdoor stuff, and we climbed a glacier in Patagonia.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's one of the like 7 wonders of the natural world, but I think it's one of only 2 glaciers that are actually growing, currently expanding. Most glaciers are retracting. And because it's still growing, it does a lot of the fracturing where the big chunks of ice kind of crack and fall off. And while we were there, I mean, like, there was multiple fractures that were the size of a bus, and there was one that was the size of like a 10-story building that just cracked and fell
into the water. It was amazing.
And when we did it, and I don't know if you remember this, but the week before we went, a colleague went, and all the pictures she had, it was like pouring rain, it was freezing cold, she was wearing like long johns.
Right, she had to like rent special wind gear. So we had went like equipped. Like, we had layers and all this stuff. We get down there, and it's sunny and 75 degrees.
We're on a glacier in a T-shirt.
In a T-shirt. It was fantastic, but they put crampons on you, and you take a whole hike through the glacier. You get to drink water right from it. It was, like, the freshest water ever.
You remember the Lady J's man crush, Frosty?
Oh, yeah, Frosty.
So I asked Frosty, I said, is it like this often? He's like, 2 days a year.
Yeah.
3 days a year.
He said maybe some years 5, but that's the most he's ever seen it be like that.
Yeah. Well, we can't go back now because that was
never.
That was it.
No way. That was definitely
bullseye.
It. For sure. We are childless by choice and always have been. It's actually been something we both had decided independent of getting together. So it was a one of the things that made us realize we were meant to be.
Yeah.
We love kids, but we don't want any kids.
Well, I like the child-free by choice. Whenever someone's talking about kids and asking about kids, if you just listen, I'm child-free by choice. It's just sort of, because if you don't say that, like I used to in the beginning say, oh, we're child-free. Oh, you'll have them someday. You'll change your mind.
Well, I think also
you
like
trouble,
that.
You know, you try infertility.
Right. People say childless, and it's like, no, I'm not less of anything, but I'm child-free, and it is a choice. And it does stop the conversation, because then they don't have to inquire as to why. It's like, because I decide.
And I like child free versus childless because childless does imply a longing,
a
or
loss.
Missing.
Yeah.
I'm free of them kids. I don't know nothing about raising no babies.
Mm-mm.
Not up in here.
We don't like that parenthood. No,
that parenthood. Not up in here.
No.
But even though we do, we're child free. We've got an abundance of nephews and nieces, 12 of them, and 4 great nieces. We're great aunt and uncles. That's crazy.
To 4.
Nuts.
Yes, and all of them are awesome, and we love them like crazy. Maybe we could name them all. That might be good. I'll try it. Ready?
Are you going from oldest to youngest?
I'm going to go oldest to youngest.
And Christopher's the oldest?
Yes.
Okay.
So we'll start with Christopher, Curtis, Jameek.
Yep.
Then we've got Allison, Victoria, Tyler, Sierra.
And then I think Brianna's older than...
Then we have Brianna.
Then Faith.
Then Faith. Then we have Zoe. Then we have Ashley.
Is Zoe older than Ashley?
Yes, slightly. Okay, Zoe. Okay. Then Ashley. Then Ray Ray.
Yeah.
That's all of them.
On the nieces and nephews. And then we got the greats.
And then we have the greats. We have Alani is one. Then we have Zizi.
Yeah.
Then we have Chloe.
Yeah.
And then we have Peyton.
The newest. That's a big list.
I got through all of them. Look at that.
12.
Well, 12 plus 4. So really, it's 16.
That's awesome.
It's crazy. Okay, so.
And then we in Argentina, we got LASIK eye surgery, but we both wore glasses our whole life.
Our whole lives.
And I've just now, it's been about like 6 years since we had the eye surgery.
Yeah.
There's still every once in a while, I'll look at a picture where we're both wearing glasses. Right. I'm like, oh man, we used to wear glasses.
Yeah, I mean, in our wedding pictures, we both have on glasses. Yeah.
Do you remember the glasses I used to wear, those Oakley ones?
Yeah.
That would put like the dent in my head?
Yeah.
I think the dent's just finally gone
away.
It's
just gone
away. Yeah, like over my temples, there was like a permanent like brain dent from the Oakley pressure temples.
Oh, that's funny. Another little fact, we have both collectively lost 170 pounds in the last 2 years.
Where did it go?
Far away from here. So, yeah, we just had a decision to change our lifestyle and focus on our health a little bit more, a lot more, actually. And it's been great, I think.
Yeah, you know, we talked about this a little bit, but there's definitely, you know, I'm not saying strange, it makes sense, but I'm a large guy, 6'4", used to be 300 pounds, and now I'm less. But I don't always think of myself as big as I am.
Right. Right?
Like, we'll go places, and you'll be like, yeah, look how tall that guy is. And I'm like, yeah, that guy's fucking huge. He's half an inch taller than me. Like, I forget just, the size that I take up in general. Like I'm the dude that gets on the plane. All the other dudes like, oh, my God, don't sit next to me. Please don't let this guy have row B.
I think for me, it's even different because I don't notice tall people. But anytime someone's taller than you, I'm like, holy shit, that guy's tall. Because I'm like, it's so rare to be somewhere and see somebody taller than you. It's such an anomaly. Well, never happens.
I've always, even though I'm very boisterous and I'm, you know, big personality, I've thought of myself like interacting in the world as a shrinking violet, so
right,
to speak.
Right.
And I've never, no one looks at me that way because I'm kind of like enormous in terms of, you know, the average tall and size of a guy.
Yeah.
But now that I'm a much, much thinner, the world looks at me a little, there's definitely a, I don't want to say like an overweight stigma, but there's a, you know, that's like one of the last vestiges of insults. People say, oh, you can't say this, don't you? But people will right away say stuff like, oh, you shouldn't eat that, or haven't you had enough? Or they kind of just, I feel like people look at me differently. They interact, just everything. The drive-thru window, the grocery store.
That's true.
It's weird.
I'll agree. I feel the same since I've lost the weight. It's true. I think you're up.
All right. So we like to travel. So we've all our life, we've kind of put an emphasis on experience rather than things. Although we have things, we like experiences. So individually and together, we've traveled to Thailand, Macedonia, Spain, France, Argentina, London, Uruguay, Japan. I'm sure I'm leaving off a few, but our passports are well traveled.
Well,
Jamaica.
Yeah.
Multiple Jamaica, times.
Yes. Yeah. So the last fact is that we actually go to Jamaica every year for a vacation. We take a week and we go, but every 5 years for our big anniversaries, 5, 10, our next one will be 15 in just a couple years. We throw a huge anniversary celebration in Jamaica and we invite a ton of people to come with us, and each 5 years the number seems to be growing and growing.
Because they know how fun they hear how we throw down. They want to show up. Oh man,
so,
we got a party with you guys.
Yeah, so 2016 will be the next big bash, and I think we have 14 people for the 10th.
We're gonna have to rent the property next year.
Yeah, I think we're gonna have to rent additional
Ingrid's
property.
Other property.
Yeah, we're gonna have to expand and maybe do 3 properties instead of 2 rentals for the 15-year anniversary, but yeah. So that's 13 things for our 13th anniversary.
What's your favorite one on that list of 13?
I don't know. I want to say climbing the glacier because I just remember, I just think it's something that few people like on the planet get to do, and that we got to do it together, and it was so awesome. And it's one of my favorite memories from our time in Argentina. And then the gratitude jar, because it's a constant thing.
Yeah,
so.
I was going to name the gratitude jar. And then as you said, the glacier in Patagonia, I was thinking, you know, just the fact that we lived in Argentina.
Yeah.
So the glacier was possible because we lived in Argentina.
Absolutely.
But what a wonderful opportunity. You know, we're very privileged, very fortunate that we could do that, that it was available to us. And we've talked a little bit about, you know, getting outside your comfort zone, kind of being able to understand other people, other cultures. And I do feel that traveling, and not just traveling, but living abroad in that regard, it, you know, I shouldn't speak for you, but me, I'm very different. You know, that experience has it's changed me in a way. I look at things and I look at the world in a slightly different way because I've lived in Argentina. I think I appreciate things a little bit more because I've lived somewhere where you know, there isn't as much luxury and comfort as we have.
Absolutely. Oh, you left Italy off the list of our travels.
I knew I forgot a couple of things.
Yeah, that was a great trip.
Italy was fantastic.
And I do think that our travel specifically in South America, too, is really unique because I do feel that Europe is still Western society. And so there were a lot of comfort in being American there. We weren't nearly as foreign, but in Argentina, we really had to fit ourselves into their culture, and the act of doing that really changed us. And so, you know, it just was an amazing experience, and, you know, changed us personally, and it changed us as a couple, and it was a start, I think, the impetus for a lot of the changes that have occurred in our life since then. So we love Argentina and all of our Argentine family and friends down there. We
Porteños.
Miss them terribly. All of the Porteños and Platenses, and we just love them all.
Lo estamos con alambre.
Lo estamos con
alambre. So we're getting getting close, so I think we should...
Hold it! Hold it. Time out! Time out! I got something in my eye, jag-off!
So we'll leave it on that, I guess.
We'll leave it on that. I did just want to make one more mention. You can find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. Just search for Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. Or check out our website, interracialjohn.com. And you can follow me at Leslie Mack on Twitter and at Very White Guy to get my cohort on Twitter. And you can also follow the John itself at Interracial John. That's J-A-W-N. And we do follow back from that account. So if you're looking to get some followers, follow at Interracial John. And that Ferguson website, please, I implore everybody to do your best to prepare and participate in a response to the pending grand jury verdict in the Darren Wilson case. And go to FergusonResponse.tumblr.com. Find your city. And if you don't, plan something and add your city to the list.
Yeah. I'm not a player, but I tweet a lot.
That's the truth. All right, babe. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary, love.
I love you.
Love you more.
High five.